Welcome to the In Pursuit of Luxury podcast. I'm Sean Borstrop, and today we're coming to you from the In Pursuit of Luxury conference in London. Joining me are two remarkable innovators, Biju Abiola, Vice President and Chief of Staff to the CEO at Cartier, and Sam Bompas, renowned for creating some of the world's most immersive experiences. Together, we'll be diving into the realities, challenges, and future possibilities of luxury that is ethical, responsible, and honest.
This is luxury.
Yeah, this is
custard cream.
You don't get luxury than that.
I can actually tell you about that. So, Biju, you're eating a custard cream biscuit. How are you finding it? Have you had one before?
No, that is amazing.
It's a South London special, actually, that used to be made in Bermondsey, so not far from here. And you'll see the little crenellations on it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are representative of ferns, which used to be a signifier of female emancipation related to the suffragette movement.
I'm buying this cookie. Taking it back with me to New York.
The only problem is it's a little bit dry.
Would you like some water?
Well, what a way to start the conversation. So we are talking now about if everything's luxury, is anything luxury? And I'm delighted to have Biju Abiola, who's here from New York, and Sam Bompas, who's here from London. I can tell you, I'll let them introduce themselves and then we'll... fire away with the chat. Sam, let's start with you. Tell us what you do.
Thank you so much. Hello, it's very lovely to be here. I'm Sam Bompas. I'm from Bompson Park. We are an experience design creative studio. We're based in London. And it's amazing to be back here in Ravensbourne as well. Our first collaboration as a studio with any academic institution was with Ravensbourne, experimenting with jelly. It's where we came from. And... and then we went on, actually, in this very building, which the beautiful sort of tessellated exterior by Future Systems. When the building was being launched, we were invited again to make that with a vast jelly. It was absolutely delicious. The launch came. Actually, the launch was by, at the time, Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, who had a very different reputation then. And I think this brings into the question of luxury. Time, storytelling, and context. Because obviously when Boris was launching, he was the hero. Now people might have quite a different impression of him. Although their different opinions will differ.
Yeah, I think they probably do. Biju, tell us.
His energy is like 10 times my energy. But my name is Biju, and I am the Vice President and Chief of Staff to the CEO of Cartier. And I have been in the luxury and retail industry for about 17 years on the corporate side. Really started with a passion and love for the business. My background is in economics. I went to Brooklyn College, where Veronica is a professor for undergrad, and then went on to Columbia. And then after business school at Harvard, shifted into strategy. So really the strategy side of luxury. And I'm very happy to be here and be on the board of IPOL.
Yes, you are indeed.
Yes.
Yeah, so I wanted to just start the conversation because I know you both into experience and what that might be for luxury. So what is experiential luxury?
So our route into it as well was just trying to make things that people tell each other about. You know that moment where you see your friends, they ask you what you've been up to, and you probably have about 2 minutes of their attention. How do you give them something that's meaningful? And for me, that's been doing things like taking over Selfridges, flooding the roof of it, to make a boating lake and float up bar, all the things glow in the dark. You actually go through a waterfall to get to the bar, and then some of our staff would sort of attack you, but in a playful way with crystal-tipped spears. And then you get to the bar. Hooray, reward. And over the course of this, you become sort of the hero of your own adventure. You have some sense of agency. You're the center of the story. And, that I think is... Oh, and the good news is when we did that, we put about 60 tons of weight load on the roof of Selfridges. My business partner's hair is white. It went gray in a month because he was worried that we're going to collapse the corner of Selfridges. Just through all the weight loading. We didn't. It was great. It's still there. You can go. But actually, speaking with Alana Weston of Selfridges, that for her when she was creative director for that department store for 10 years. And really was very innovative in doing things like bringing, moving luxury fashion into addressing things like sustainability. But that doing that, which is kind of playful, it was fun, was one of the things that she looks back on as being a triumph. Hopefully there's an answer in there somewhere for you.
Yeah. What is experiential luxury to you?
Yeah. I actually like to say that luxury is a feeling, actually. So experiential luxury, I always say that we're not really selling a thing. We're selling that feeling that you have when you get the thing, right? So of course, price tags do matter, but it's really that sensation that you feel when you own that item or when you go and sit in that class of, you know, service, whether it's business class, first class, when you have an experience like what you have. Although I don't know if that's luxury coming down. Like I wouldn't define that as luxury. I'm more on the quiet luxury side of things. Sam is probably on a whole different side. But I definitely think luxury and experiential luxury is, as you define it, experience, that feeling of elevation.
And that's why this is going to be a great chat, because you're coming at it from completely different points of view. Okay, but
just setting boundaries as well.
Yeah.
Is there an answer we're supposed to? I mean, this is headlined as, you know, as the luxury summit.
Yeah.
Has there been a luxury definition coined?
No.
Okay.
No, and you're welcome to try.
Well, I don't know. Maybe for me, it's like luxury is like the sort of like the cigarette is this perfect vehicle for experience that you can never quite achieve the perfect cigarette because it's always inviting you to have another and go further.
That's our byline.
It's very ephemeral. I don't know.
Well, no, absolutely. I think the biggest challenge for all of us, and that's why the title of this is if everything's luxury, is anything luxury? Because how do you answer that question? How would you answer that question? If everything is luxury, is anything luxury?
I don't even know. So I have a very different approach or different thought process now with the age of social media. I think once upon a time before social media, luxury truly felt very exclusive. And, you know, people have different thoughts about this, right? So should luxury be accessible? Yeah. But then how do you achieve exclusivity and accessibility at the same time? And so Sean knows this, but I've been very adamant about the fact that my brand name, Cartier, doesn't go on anything at all, because we just don't do that. We don't put our name anywhere. We're extremely quiet. But of course, you all know the brand, but we're very careful where the name shows up, right? So it's this idea of when you come into a boutique of ours or any other boutique, you're welcome, but how do we make sure that your experience is so elevated that it's like nothing that you've ever had? So I'm not sure I can answer the question if everything is luxury, is everything luxury? However, I do think we're in an age where the differentiation between what is luxury and what isn't is a very slim, thin line. And I'm finding that the ones that are winning are the truly quiet ones that are winning through just existing. So if you think of Hermes, if you think of Loro Piana, if you think of Cartier, like the truly elevated brands are not the loud ones. And the ones that are kind of struggling right now sales-wise are the Gucci's, the Louis Vuitton's, the ones that are... I think there's someone here from Louis Vuitton. Sorry.
No, it doesn't matter.
Okay. never mind. But my point is like the more louder brands are kind of struggling right now, right? And then the more exclusive, we don't know what you're wearing, but we know, like IOIK, IOIK, if you know, you know. Like that's where we're seeing the success in the business right now.
But is there, I had a question with that. Is there like a dynamism with that? And is there a time code with it? So like I do a lot of work in the art sector, and a lot of the art sector has to work very hard because there's public funding in it. So it's everyone's money is going into it to persuade people that it's not elitist. And of course, art is ultimately about the exercise of taste. And taste is something that is not fixed. It's dynamic. It's learned. It changes remarkably over time. And it changed remarkably over time because it's an elite strategy. It's an exclusionary strategy. How do you know what's good and what's bad? But I think sometimes that brings, you know, there was a time when Gucci was smashing it. It was the top of the tree. Everyone was like, their strategy is like absolutely nailing it. And now it's not. And there'll be a question, what's next? Because it is a dynamic.
Sure, right? You're absolutely right. But I do think what's happening is that more people are getting more access to disposable income. Like if we think of, you know, that year after the pandemic when luxury skyrocketed in sales, it was because people genuinely had more disposable income in their pockets. They weren't traveling as much. They didn't have as much to spend on, whether it was like whatever the cost of living was reduced. So they had more to spend. And they went to buy things that they maybe always aspire to, the Gucci's, even our brand benefited from that, right? But I think as more people get access to income and can purchase things, then you'll find that the ultra wealthy want a point of differentiation. And so I see the polarity existing even more. And I think it's only going to get bigger. Now, will Logomania come back? I hope not. But if it does, it's fine. It's just like I just really think that we're going to continue to see that differentiation between the consumer who wants you to know what they're wearing and who doesn't want you to. And that the best luxury brands, and all of them do this, except for maybe Loro Piana, have something for everyone. So you come in the store and you only have maybe 600 pounds. You can find something. I don't mean only in it. Is that okay for me to say only? Okay.
Yes.
You have 600 pounds. You can purchase something. And then someone else who has, believe it or not, I was just in a boutique yesterday and someone bought like a 150,000 pound watch, right? But the experience for each person that walks through that door has to be the same. We have to treat each client as if they are going to spend 150,000 pounds. And that's the feeling that I'm talking about.
Yeah. So I get the feeling. Yeah. And you both have the feeling. It's not always about the product. I mean, which is Bijou, what you're saying. But then that goes back to the original question, because if you've got, you know, I don't know, let's use Chanel, because they're trying to sue me. Let's use Chanel as an example.
Is that happening now?
No, that was. I'll tell you that story when I finish this. If Chanel are selling a lipstick for £30, that's a luxury. It is a luxury to somebody. They're selling the couture dress for £275,000. Is the luxury only in that experience? It's forgetting about buying the lipstick, but you're buying Chanel. Is that you are saying?
Yeah, the luxury is the brand name,
yeah,
almost, right? Because you can go buy lipstick from Boots. You can buy, can you buy lipstick at Boots?
Yeah, okay, sorry. Chanel lipstick at Boots.
You can?
Yeah.
Oh.
You see? You can.
That's different. You can't do that in America. But, you know, you can go buy lipstick at Boots. You can go buy it at anywhere.
Yeah.
And so, but what people are buying into is the name, really and truly it's the name, because that's, and how do you get to that kind of name that warrants a premium, right? Like that, I think, is where today we haven't really seen any new entrants into the luxury space, maybe except for the Row, Mary Kate and Ashley's brand, but there are very few brands that have been able to command this sense of our name alone is worth that feeling.
Sure. But Sam, your experiences are very different because they are physical experiences. So you're not going in there to buy anything at all.
Yeah, and like, well, a lot of it starts with food. You do buy a thing. There's an object on the plate, and at the end of it, it is disgustingly not on the plate anymore.
Yeah,
And then you've had it in the most visceral way possible. But I think, you know, coming here, we're talking a lot about with my friends and people in the studio, like what is luxury. We started getting into conversations about like the favorite places you've eaten. What are your favorite restaurants? And, I often take people from the States to when they come here to St. John. And do you know St. John? You walk in, it's very stark. The wait staff are very competent, very knowledgeable, pretty casual and pretty rude. the food is all... a lot of it is viscera. It's organ meats. It's cheap cuts, effectively. It's completely unforgiving in terms of anyone's dietary. Anyone turns up with like you know, I think there might be one dish on the menu that is suitable for vegans and vegetarians, and that's the only concession. My guests from New York and America often raise an eyebrow. They're like, what the hell is this place? Like, this is just insane as a restaurant. But it's been running very, very successfully for 25, 30 years. And when I go there, the whole thing glows with memory. It glows with feeling. It glows with experience. I've been there on the 20th anniversary and I was eating. They did this dish where they took all these like tiny piglets and then cooked just the piglets' faces. So they look like, this is different versions of luxury here, sorry. They look like tiny cooked children's faces. Oh. And then I love reading a lot, and I was reading a book called The Cruel Sea. And do you remember Nancy Dallaglio? She came up to me, she said, this is a very, very important book for me because nature is very, very cruel. And you're like, this is completely ridiculous. What a wonderful world it is that this is all happening at the same time in this space with these people. And, you know, I'll never capture the moment like that again. So it's imbued with this veneer, this lacquer of layers of memory that go back. And also, my sister was married there. I had my father's 75th there. Trevor Guff, I made some fake wine, like your fake handbag, real hat fake. And so we made a lot of first growth wines by dosing them with nature identical chemicals that we worked with the Flavor House to develop. And Trevor Gulliver, who's CEO there, only spat out one of them in disgust. That was a real triumph there. Anyway, it's a long way of saying, experiences can really tickle things as well.
Right. So this morning we had Zandra Rhodes, Richard McVettis, Piers Atkinson, and Maria Grashvogel, designers and an artist, talking about this idea of luxury. And they were talking about them as the luxury, because they are the makers. They are the ones who are spending the time in perfecting what they were doing, and that you can't replicate that through a brand. What are your...
sorry, they sound like total narcissists. Sorry. I mean, like, I'm very interested in, like, what creative practice is, and yeah. I think good creative practice relies on networks of people and technologies and opportunities and societies. When someone says, I'm the luxury... Yeah.
Well, they didn't quite say it in those words. I'm slightly...
That's a challenge. I've got a challenge.
I kind of understand the sense of I am the luxury in the sense of, if you think of Coco Chanel, back when she launched, she was the luxury, right? It was her. And a lot of what we're buying today stems from who this woman was at a time when women weren't really designing. If we think of Dior, you know, he was... So I understand when a maison starts with an individual, the individual is... what we're buying into, because of course their craftsmanship is known for whatever, you know, in Dior's case, he was known to be like really good at designing for the woman's body. So I kind of get the sense of you are what.
Thank you. Thank you for saving that.
She just called him a narcissist. And I'm like, no, I get it. Like, you know, when it's an individual, you are the one that people are buying into until it becomes truly commercialized at some point. So.
But yeah, I mean, Sam, you are the same. I mean, you are the luxury of your, aren't you? Because people come to you.
I'm a front man and a showman. So heckling you to go to lunch and things like that. I've done that before. But I get to work with like lots of very talented people. I wouldn't be able to do what I do initially with my business partner, Harry, who's an architect by training. And, you know, I'll be able to go and promise things that he's then able to deliver. Or I say it differently. I say I go and get the money and he spends it. But we've got different dates. And we've been working together very closely for 18 years tomorrow. So it's a lovely relationship.
Is there a party?
What's that?
Is there a party?
We actually had a very small... Well, it was almost like that, actually. Yesterday we had a birthday celebration. We had giant creme brulees, vast creme brulees. I turned up for my first meeting today with a canister of a chef's burner. But it's based on Trinity College in Cambridge has these desserts where they actually brand the dessert. It's brand as a branding iron, where you heat up the brand and then you use that to crystallize the sugar on top of the dessert. And then you get the logo of the college in the top of the dessert. And it's the very earliest form of branding. But we also had Lancashire Hot Pot, which it's basically stew. Yeah. It's quite humble. I went into the kitchen. Our chef, our head chef, is from Australia. He was like, "Is this right?" And there were like four lamb's necks of esophagus and all right. on being cooked up. And I was like, "Yes, I mean, it's not sophisticated. It was delicious. It was really delicious."
Yeah, I think there are a few vegetarians here. Might not be so delicious, or vegans. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, you slightly threw me there. Oh, yeah. So this idea is of you being the luxury or you being the luxury. You might not make the product, but Adam, I don't know, Adam's not here, but Adam and I were talking this morning about this idea of going to the space to meet the person who will provide you with either the product or service.
I guess I've worked quite hard as well to recognize the other people that I work with. So I can't make a Lancashire hot pot like the chef can make. Again, I can't do the architecture that Harry does. And the creative practice of our specific studio is through bringing those areas of expertise together and allowing them to intermingle. And even someone like Coco Chanel, she's not making every single product that she makes. She's working with artisans to be able to do that. And they facilitate some of that creative direction and the opportunities and the markets that she creates for those artisans. But you know, one of the projects we're doing at the moment is building a museum of Shakespeare. And so Shakespeare held up as like the sort of ultimate genius and a driver of revenue. I mean, Dame Judi Dench's last book were about Shakespeare. It's just called The Man Who Pays the Bills. But of course, as soon as you start really exploring what is this sort of ultimate creator of stories that are so relevant that they're being played all over London, all over the world now, 400 years after they're written. And a lot of it was through collaboration. A lot of it was through the technology of the time. One technology just being like having a stage. it sounds pretty basic. A lot of it's through the audience and the need in a city of London. Like, you've got 200,000 people. How do you get 2,000 of those people to come see your play as opposed to anyone else's every night? It's a really good editing process. So I think it destabilized that idea of like the person as luxury from my point of view. It's not, it's just.
No, well, that's, I mean, you know, it's a view. What about this idea that everything is luxury?
Well, I think that's where the challenge is, is that everything is now being defined as luxury. So then nothing is really luxury. I almost feel like luxury is now synonymous with money almost. And even when money is involved, it's not always a luxurious experience, right? Like, people can have a lot of money and not necessarily have luxurious experiences. So I go back to what I was saying before, and I think I'm sounding a little repetitive, but it's this idea of what is that experience? And also understanding that what might be luxury to me might not be luxury to you, right? So a lot of what you're describing to someone could be considered top of the top. The experience is exactly what they would want. And then to someone else is like, I will never go there again. You know what I mean? So it's all an individual pursuit.
That wraps up this conversation from the IPOL Honest Luxury Conference in London. A huge thanks to Bijou Abiola from Cartier and Sam Bompas from Bompas & Parr for sharing their insights on how the luxury industry can and must embrace honesty, transparency, and meaningful change. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and follow the IPOL podcast for more deep dives into the shifting world of luxury. I'm Sean Borstrock. Thanks for listening. Until next time.